Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Kelly Gamont, and today is Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. With me today, I have, as always, because it's Wednesday, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Great to be here.
And also with us today, Andrew Orr. How you doing, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
All right. So today we have a couple of things we want to discuss. I think the first one is interesting. So, Andrew, I want to go to you on this and see what your stance is, because I kind of know what John and I both think about it. The new iPhone, there's another wave of iPhone pre-orders. We got a press release this morning from Apple announcing that on Friday, the iPhones that come in colors are the ones that are going to go on pre-order. What's your take on this? I thought it was interesting that they were delaying it sort of away from the time that the sort of regular iPhone release happened, because we got two models at that point. So what do you think of having the color one kind of be a little bit later and all by itself?
I thought it made a little sense just because the 10R is a completely brand new model. So I have a feeling that maybe Apple was using this time to kind of get a feeling for how many people would be, you know, pre-ordering it. Mm-hmm. And from what I've been reading and listening to people online, it sounds like a lot of people are wanting to get it. So I think it might be kind of a good, basically, you know, like a cheaper model version of the iPhone XS. So I think it will be pretty popular.
I do too. The thing, in a weird way, that I thought it sort of had not going for it was that it's the one that comes in colors. And for people who paid attention when Apple did the 5C, which was the previous edition of iPhone that came in colors, it was sort of not quite an iPhone 5. It didn't come in quite the same capacity. It was a little bit less oomph, I think, than the other models of the iPhone at that particular moment. So I wondered if maybe that would be something that hurts this one, but I'm really interested because it is a new phone. It's a totally new model. It's got a lot of other stuff going for it, and you can get one in a few different colors. So I sort of thought, I like your take, Andrew, that it's that they're sort of gauging demand. I looked at it as another opportunity to put the iPhone back in the headlines after the 0-day stampede had sort of settled down from the initial wave of iPhone orders from September. But also that putting this one out as sort of a less expensive model a little bit later, because people aren't doing a lot of Christmas shopping in September, but maybe they're doing a little Christmas shopping in October. Maybe like as a gift sort of thing, and having that wave sort of come and go, but also getting people who kind of don't necessarily care about 0-day. They're not people who are upgrading every year. And this might be a more appealing option for somebody who has like an iPhone 7, in my opinion. So, you know, this also does put, like I said, put the iPhone front and center. We've had the pre-orders announced for the Pixel 3 from Google, because Google had their event not too long ago and announced that. John, what do you think about this?
Well, my understanding of the delay is that there were technical production issues with the LCD display, which forced Apple's hand and made them delay the introduction. Otherwise, they would have done it at the same time. But having done that, I'm going to be very curious to see how the breakdown goes in terms of people who waited and people who did not. I'm sort of thinking that there were a lot of people who wanted the larger OLED display, the XS Max. And I'm thinking there's a second group of people who didn't want to wait for the XR because they were caught up in their furor. Maybe that's a middle third. And then I'm thinking there's going to be a third of the people who are just steadfastly, grimly, certainly waiting to spend a few $100 less on an LCD display and want a new phone. And that's the final third. That's the way I kind of see it breaking down.
I feel like your final third might actually be split in half between people who care about the price. Like, my iPhone is old enough and I need a new one, but I'm not spending a 4-digit number on a phone. I think that might be a subsection of your final third in that stretch, just because it's a lot of money.
But the question is will that final thirds overcome in numbers the people who bought a XS and a XS Max. That's the real question. Is this going to be a popular phone by gobs, or is the delay going to kind of take the wind out of its sails? Given that there's also a lot of fuss and a lot of furor and a lot of sensation about the XS and the XS Max, It might have lured some people into spending a little bit of extra money a little earlier to get the satisfaction of having a new phone. So that's my question. I don't know how many people are willing to hold out and whether that's going to be enough people to just obliterate the sales already of the popular XS Max.
Andrew, what do you think?
I have a feeling it will be popular. And this is also the reason why I think that the launch of this is different than the 5C, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. Because for all intents and purposes, the XR is the XS. There are really only a couple differences, like the camera and the screen, maybe one or two other things I don't know of. But other than that, it's almost the exact same phone, and it's a lot cheaper. And I think for those reasons, it might be pretty popular.
So a thing that I sort of wondered about with this is if there were people who maybe were ready for a new phone last year, and it came out and the rumors were true and it was a 4-digit number and they waited. Like, I want a good phone. I want like the top of the line phone. I don't want just an iPhone 8 because apparently I'm the only person who bought one. And, you know, and people looked at it and got hung up on the price and stopped. Or, you know, we still are kind of in a space in the mobile market, I think, where your phone, it's not disposable, but you know it's got a very limited lifespan, and at some point it's going to end up in a drawer, or, you know, the thing that you let the kids play on to keep them quiet in the line at the grocery store or whatever. And so, you know, thinking about spending $1,000 on that device for some people is untenable. And I wonder if there are a lot of people who maybe would have bought a phone last year and bailed, and now looking at the XR, are actually looking at that as an attractive option because it does come in under $1,000, but it comes in looking an awful lot like an iPhone X. It's got the notch. There's no home button. You know, it's the same. It's a similar size, like all of the stuff that kind of goes into, you know, glancing at someone's phone and figuring out if it's an iPhone X or not. Like, all of that is there, and you can get one in a color, and, you know, it's available now and not going to be the crater creating force in your pocketbook that, you know, the 10 would have been. So I wonder, what do you guys think? Do you think that maybe there's some pent up demand for this? Because I too think it's going to be pretty popular.
Yeah. I mean, I think basically the same thing. It's like a budget XS pretty much.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think is going to make that interesting is how the pricing stacks up against the Android devices that we've seen and how it stacks up against the Android devices that are out there, because that's another piece of this is trying to compete with those bits of hardware as well, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to have a compelling model to get somebody to spend a little bit more money in that way. And this might be an excellent way to do that.
I was thinking about the old days just now, about how you got a new iPhone every year for $199 and it was subsidized into your carrier contract.
Ah, yes.
Remember the $199 days?
Wow. I do. $299. Remember, if you wanted the 32-gigabyte model, it was $299.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I think I got my 5S and that was my 6S was the last subsidized phone. I don't know that they even offer the subsidized plans for the iPhones anymore. I think I got in on the tail end of that with AT&T, and that was a success.
I just recycled the 6S with the Apple Store, and they gave me a $100 gift card for a 6S.
Hey.
Pretty nice.
So, John, what's your phone? The current phone that you carry, what is it?
I have a XS Max, and I love it.
XS Max. And Andrew, what's yours?
I'm still have my iPhone 7 Plus, and okay. I still really like it. It's a good model for me.
Okay. So you're not one of the XR people then?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, maybe. Who knows?
Well, we'll talk to you on Friday morning and see how you feel about it then. One other thing I do want to talk to you guys about is 4K television. So this is a topic, as always, near and dear to John's heart. Yes. We talk about 4K a lot. And part of the reason that we're talking about it today is because, John, you wrote a piece about how it's sort of officially a thing now, which sounds sort of odd, but it's one of those technology. It's a TV technology that didn't go away, which, you know, a lot of them did. And I think you're sort of telling people to get ready that this is the new way of things.
Yeah, it's firmly here now. There were a couple of fads that we went through. We went through the days of 3D TV, gave people headaches, had to pay a lot of money for extra glasses. It never really worked out very well. And then we went through the curved displays, which was a fad, and it turned out that didn't work out very well. But that doesn't mean that the industry was really off track with HDR. In fact, they hit it out of the park. And so this high dynamic range, things like Dolby Vision and HDR 10 and so on, mm-hmm. that seriously enhance the picture, no matter what retina effect is in effect, and no matter how far you sit away from the TV, you're going to see a dramatically better picture with HDR. And that was the winning combination that brought 4K into the mainstream. And heretofore, I guess maybe if you'd asked somebody maybe a year ago, they'd say 4K is fringe. It's never going to go very far. The TVs are very expensive, $3,000 or $4,000. Mm-hmm. But things have changed a lot in 2017 and 2018. And now, yesterday I referenced an IHS report that in 2019, half the TVs sold in the world will be 4K TVs.
Wow.
And most of those will be ultra high definition. Most of them will be 4K and a smattering will be 8K. So I think in time, people have come to understand the advantages of HDR. They've gone into the local Best Buy and they've seen examples of Dolby Vision. And one of my readers in the article said he was in a TV store the other day. I forget what store. And he saw a 1080p TV and it was kind of like, you know, not inspiring because 1080p will never go HDR. Mm-hmm. It could technically, but the manufacturers aren't going to go there. Mm-hmm. Because it's a dying technology. So, you know, you watch a 1080p screen without Dolby Vision and you watch a 4K TV with it and you go, this is a dramatic change. And depending on which TV you buy, the OLEDs and the quantum dots are still in the $2,000 or $3,000 range for a 55 inch. But you can get a very nice LED backlit LCD TV from Samsung or Sony or LG for just under $1,000. I've seen them at Costco for a 55 or 65 inch. So they're very affordable. And if you go even smaller, like, you know, 50 inch, mm-hmm. You can spend maybe $500 on a discount 4K TV. So it's here. It's mainstream. HDR works. Apple TV delivers Dolby Vision, HDR 10. Amazon.
No, only the fourth gen Apple TV, correct?
Right. The Apple TV 4K.
Yeah.
Right. Netflix and Amazon are delivering this quite considerable amount of content in 4K and Dolby Vision. Mm-hmm. So it's here. It's a thing. And I expect a lot of people to realize now that it's a lot better than high definition. And the nice thing about it is if you hook up your 1080i or 1080p DVR, or your 1080p Blu-ray player to this TV, it's going to upscale. And Sony has a really good scaler. Most TVs have good ones, but Sony's are really exceptional. And so it's going to take your 1080p content and scale it up to 4K, and it's going to look really good. It's not going to look as good as authentic, real 4K coming in from mm-hmm. Netflix. But it's going to look pretty good. So you'll have a TV that can go to 4K when you want to on Netflix, and makes the rest of your stuff look pretty good. And the experience of Dolby Vision is just amazing. So it's mainstream. It's time.
So if someone was buying a 4K TV for the first time, do you have any models in mind that you would recommend?
Yeah, there's an issue with HDR 10. Samsung has decided to go its own way with something called HDR 10 Plus. And so you can't get Dolby Vision on Samsung TVs. They just want to do their own thing. They don't want to pay the licensing fee, or they don't want to lose control of the video, control of the what's delivered to the display. So if you want Dolby Vision, which is the dominant HDR right now, and it'll fall back to HDR, your TV will fall back to HDR 10 if the content is not in Dolby Vision, then you should buy a Vizio or an LG or a TLC or a Sony, and stay away from the Samsungs, because they just don't have Dolby Vision. And HDR 10 is a sort of a thing that Samsung and Panasonic came up with, and there's not a lot of content yet being delivered, if any, in HDR 10, a smattering. Oh, I think one studio has said they're committed to it, but how much content there is, I don't think there is a lot. So that's the differentiator. If you want to go with Dolby Vision, stay away from the Samsungs.
Okay.
It's kind of funny that Samsung went full Sony on this, but like, we're going to do kind of what everybody's supposed to be doing, but we're going to do it ourselves in this other way so we can brand it.
The other thing Samsung didn't do is they didn't go with OLED. LG and Sony have gone OLED. Samsung has gone with something called QLED, which sounds like OLED. Samsung does that. They try to, in my opinion, it seems as though they're trying to confuse the consumer by offering this thing called QLED, which is quantum dots. And what quantum dots are is very high quality LEDs with a broad color gamut and dynamic range and a high brightness that are used as the backlight for conventional LCDs. So when you buy a QLED from Samsung, what you're getting is an LCD TV with quantum dots backlit instead of a conventional LED backlit. It's better, and the screens are amazing, but it still isn't OLED.
Right.
And you still don't get the zero black levels, because when an OLED pixel is off, it's off. It's dead. It's not being backlit.
Oh, okay. So
that's why you get the great contrast ratios with OLED.
So, Andrew, are you in the market, or are you asking for a friend?
I was just asking in general. Like, maybe one of the listeners wanted to know.
Yeah, well, if 4K is officially here and officially a thing, and we all kind of need to get ready for it, I think the thing most people probably want to do now is start prowling those Black Friday flyers and see what kind of great deals there are, because that's usually a time to get an excellent price on a TV. I think part of it has just been, for me anyway, part of it's been upgrade fatigue, because remember, everything went high def and then all the screens went flat. So you had to buy a flat TV, and then you had to buy a bigger flat TV. And then, like, do you get a plasma TV or not? And then do you get a 3D TV or not? And so, you know, everything went through this like really expensive phase of, I have to go spend another $1,000 or two or more on a television. And, you know, a year later, like, everybody's going, nobody wants that anymore. The thing you really want is this. And so I'm sort of glad to see that, you know, the 4K thing isn't a fad. It's not like the 3D that we saw in televisions. It's not going away. One more important thing, Kelly.
The Apple TV 4K supports Dolby Vision and the standard fallback standard HDR 10.
Okay.
And a broadcast standard called HLG, which is not really in widespread use yet. So if you're going to buy an Apple TV 4K, which supports Dolby Vision, don't buy a Samsung TV and marry it, because you won't be able to take advantage of Dolby Vision. You should buy a
TV
that does support Dolby Vision, like a Sony or an LG or a Vizio.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of information. I know people can dig further into what information is out there in your piece. And I want to go ahead. I think we're going to go ahead and call it for today. So I want to thank both of you for being here. Andrew, thanks so much for coming by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me too.
And this has been Daily Observations for October 17th. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont, and we'll see you tomorrow.